If you are a B2B marketer who's interested in thriving in the UK, then our next guest is absolutely for you. Becca Chambers has got many, many different titles: mother, spouse, daughter, campaigner, fundraiser. I don't really know her for any of those things. I know Becca Chambers as a PR and comms strategist who has crossed the pond with a number of different brands with myself and won many awards in that process and achieved some great success. And it is with that in mind that I invited, I'm delighted to invite Becca onto this podcast. And in addition to all those different titles, Becca is also, I understand, in the 0.1% of all LinkedIn contributors. So I'm especially thrilled to have you with us today. Thank you and welcome to Crossing the Pond.
Well, hey, happy to see you and happy to be here. So thank you.
Before we kick off, one of the first things that I think we should do is do a very quick history of your career to date. How did you end up becoming one of the 0.1% influencers on LinkedIn, specifically in relation to B2B comms?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of accidental, actually, which I think is such a weird thing where I, you know, I worked with you, Richard, for many years when I ran communications programs. And in that role, I'm a behind the scenes person, right? I'm helping amplify other people's voices, whether it's like my CEO or other executives around their thought leadership. I was spending so much of my day job trying to convince the executives that I worked with why they needed to be showing up online authentically. And I was using other people as proof points, and I was trying to make this point, and I was so exhausted by it that I was like, I'm just going to do it myself. I'm going to be the proof of concept. So I started to do it just to say, you know, hey, if I just, Becca Head of Comms, can get a million views in X number of months, you could get 10 times that. But what I found is when I started posting, because I write in the way that I talk, I started getting, I think I had a million views in my first couple of months that I started posting. And that, for me, became this reinforcement that I just needed to keep doing it. So I kept doing it and it built on itself. And I would look at who was following me and I would adjust and I would just keep testing and trying. And eventually I got to the point where I was hitting like 10 million views in a month. Proof of concept.
10 million views in a month.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That's my average for the last year. But I had one post that got 20 million views, one post. So it just goes to show that, you know, if you can show up with your authentic voice and you can find your audience, like, you are a brand, right? And I think that's something that, especially in this age of AI, like, a personality and adding value to other people's lives in a way that they resonate with, that really cuts through right now.
And I see that in your content. It's very much about sharing who you are beyond the world of B2B, which has been fascinating for me because I know you from the work that we did in cybersecurity and in all the other areas that we were touching upon. And actually, your journey in the world of B2B, nobody's really born wanting to do B2B PR or B2B comms. So how did that begin? Where did that come from?
I had finished grad school, actually, at the London School of Economics, speaking of across the pond. So I had just moved back to the US and the Great Recession was in full swing and there were no jobs to be had. So I do what I do, take my ADD energy, and I started learning new skills. I was like, okay, I'm going to build PowerPoint presentations and I'm going to learn how to do graphic design. And I started doing this stuff and I had two master's degrees in various communications things. So I started applying to jobs. And one of the jobs I ended up applying to was McAfee in the Bay Area, which is, you know, a cybersecurity company. And the assignment that the hiring manager gave me was build me a PowerPoint presentation about WikiLeaks. That's how old this was. It was back in the original WikiLeaks days. And so I built a PowerPoint presentation and he was like, this presentation is awesome. You're hired. And so they moved me up to the Bay Area and that's how I got into B2B. And frankly, to your point, like, not only would I not have thought I want to work in B2B tech, I wouldn't have thought I want to work in cybersecurity, but when your options are limited, you try, I think, more different new things. And I'm so glad that I fell into the role that I fell into, because I got to start from having this view of, like, behind the scenes view with executives. I was traveling with the CEO. I was traveling with all of the C-suite. And, like, you know, when you travel with those people, you're also having dinner with them. You're also getting to see the personal side of them, and you're learning a ton about business that you don't get to learn, you know, necessarily in other communications roles.
When I began my career, I was doing all sorts of different types of PR. I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do, but B2B really resonated with me. And it was because of the point that you just raised, which is, I think, you get a seat at the table more accessibly in the world of B2B, where B2B PR matters more, perhaps, than in the consumer world, where it can be the icing on the cake of a marketing program.
Exactly. I mean, I think that B2B, you know, when we're not talking about the, like, super famous companies, when you're talking about the rest of us who work at all of the normal companies, it's harder because your stories are harder. Media doesn't care about why your database function, blah, 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 right? Like, you have to, and I think this is, we did creatively with you guys, is, like, create a story, right? Find something that matters, or find the people in your organization that have a perspective, whether or not it's about your product, because then you can create some awareness for your brand or your product. But you have to be way more creative about the way that you break through than you would if you're like, I'm selling an ice cream cone, right? Yeah. Or some consumer brand.
You really pushed that creativity, because I remember there was a campaign that you brought to Oz. I can take no credit for it, but you had created QR codes on cookies that you put out to journalists. And as an example of creativity, I don't think many consumer PR people would get the chance to do that. But you mentioned earlier about talking to the board and about bringing them on the journey and the complexity of that. And I obviously, we're talking about the United Kingdom, which is, again, another complexity that I've seen you do multiple times in terms of bringing brands to the UK and helping them land and thrive here. But that brings another complexity in terms of bringing the board along that journey as well, because these are different environments. The North American PR or editorial environment is different from the UK media landscape. And I just wanted to get your perspective on what are the main differences between the two in your experience?
Man, that's such a hard question. I think that the UK audiences are more cynical. I feel that way about most of the European media, actually. Like, Germany is impossible to break into unless you have, like, specific people on the ground. At least that's been my experience. And you have to have very specific types of press releases and a very specific type of targeting. I would say my experience is, you guys love your numbers, you love your data, and I love that about the UK press. I like that you guys are a lot less BS. Like, I mean, there's a lot of BS, don't get me wrong. But, like, when it comes to, okay, we're going to tell this business story, like, if you have data to support it, like, there is a story there, I think. And that was how I would break through in these, let's go with news droughts in the companies that I worked for, is, like, how do you create something that the media is going to grab onto? It's, you look at what stories they need to tell, and then you find the data to fill those stories. And I think that's been, and, you know, that works in the US too, but the US is a much noisier market. So if you can tailor stuff to the UK market that is about the UK market or about the local market, that isn't just some, like, global study that impacts everybody, you're winning. And I do recommend that you have somebody local who understands the local media, and you're not just having your US agency trying to spray and pray to the UK unless they have some specific experience there, because there is a nuance, you know, in the same way that I wouldn't try to reach Japanese media myself without somebody on the ground. I think that it helps to have local people who know who to talk to and how to talk to them.
And having worked with you, I think one of the key points that you raised there is the concept of ideating locally. It has to be relevant to the local market. And I think one of the things I saw you do time and time again was empower the UK and presumably the other regions that you were working with to actually come to you with suggestions about what was going to work locally from an editorial perspective. And I think that that was also a really key thing. Not every North American comms person has the ability to do that and the flexibility to do that. And I think that part of that comes from your ability to bring the team on board in terms of your board of directors, your executives, the people that you're running into. And I was thinking actually about the first time that we met, and I don't know if you remember this, but we were at InfoSec and in Earl's Court, I think it was at the time.
Yeah.
And I saw you standing on the stand of the company that we were working for, you had a board of directors member next to you, you had a journalist, you had a salesperson, and you had a customer, and you were all of these people had different agendas from different perspectives. And I saw you just kind of managing all of these people all at the same time. And I thought, nobody teaches anybody how to deal with that. So how did you acquire those skills and where did that come from?
Yeah, you're right. Nobody teaches you that. And like the way that I learn, and I think that not everybody loves this about me, is like I learn initially by like watching, right? Stop, like just looking around me. And I come off as maybe shy or rude when I first meet people because of that, when that's not my intention. It's like, I'm trying to learn. If I'm in a new situation, like I want to see how people act and whatever. And then I can do that or add to it or whatever. And I think my first few years working in B2B, like I said, I got to travel with these executives and got to see how they interacted with each other. And I learned the things that they needed. And I learned how to speak to them in the language that they needed. And I learned like to play this traffic cop situation. Yep. Became a superpower for me, because I was always like, if you go ask anybody that I worked with, whether or not they were part of my team or somebody else in the org, they'll be like, Becca's a great connector, right? Like I would put the right people together in the right rooms. And sometimes that's a journalist and an executive. Sometimes that's just two people within your own company who you've talked to and you're like, you know what? Like you have a thing that they need and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And when you add that kind of value, people trust you, people come back, people want you to be in the room with them. And so I learned by watching other people and then by figuring out like, what do these people need in order to be successful? And then inserting myself into that place, right? And it means that I don't necessarily have a magic wand and I come in day one and I solve everybody's problems. But it does mean like, if you empower me to do what I need to do and like, trust me and listen to me, like, wait and watch what kind of, you know, transformation can happen. But it is a matter of observing and adding to whatever you've learned.
Now, before we go any further, I want to understand, what are some of the common challenges that North American companies that you've worked with are faced when entering the UK? Because you've done this with companies that have been headquartered in all sorts of different places, with spokespeople from Europe, with spokespeople from North America. And so if you were advising somebody on the first time that they were coming to the UK, either as a spokesperson or as the comms person guiding the spokesperson, what would be the top three tips that you would give them to prepare for?
I mean, I think what we talked about already is like, don't make everything about global or US this or whatever. Like if you're a US company and you're going to the UK, like make it relevant to the people there. Why is this relevant to that audience? You know, why is this relevant to that market? Why is this product helpful in this specific thing? Like understand who you're talking to, understand, you know, we come from cybersecurity. So like there are different rules in England than there are in the UK. How do you go talk to people and discuss the things that are specifically relevant to them? I also think the no BS Brits can spot bullshit, I think, meter. So don't come in with a bunch of fluff, you know, like if you're going to be interviewed, like come with your talking points, nail them and be ready to have a response if somebody asks you questions, because I find that British media is just more straightforward about what they're trying to get at and will ask the questions that they want. And if you're not prepared to answer them, you're the one who's going to look stupid. So
my next question, I should confess, the next three questions I put into ChatGPT and I said, I'm interviewing Becca from LinkedIn. What should I ask her? And this is what ChatGPT thinks Becca from LinkedIn needs to be asked. So how do you see the UK's B2B marketing landscape evolving?
I think that the UK B2B landscape is shifting like everybody else's, trying to figure out how to like the media landscape, how to find space for these conversations. There is not enough attention anymore in this world. So how are brands capturing attention? I think that the struggles and the evolution that are happening everywhere are happening just the same in the UK. Media is fragmenting, right? Individuals are going to alternative media. People are moving towards newsletters or, you know, Substack.
Right.
Yeah. Social media is obviously becoming a more important place for news. And I think all of us are trying to kind of understand like what is that trend and how do we continue to, if let's say your favorite reporter leaves their top tier media outlet and they go to Substack, they're going to capture some amount of their audience who's then going to leave the original top tier media to go follow this person. And then that person gets hired by somebody else, or they still have their subs. Like, how do you continue to track all of this in addition to continue to figure out which ones you're supposed to target? Like, where is your audience? Like, I think all of us are going to continue to struggle with that for a while, but then we go to AI. AI helps us with research, right? Helps us find where is our audience? Who is talking about what? How do we make sure that we're reaching the people that we're trying to reach? I don't think that the UK's struggles with this are much different than what we're dealing with here. And I think it's only going to get worse for a while.
Well, I think that in many respects, North American media is perhaps a couple of steps ahead of that evolution. To your point, I have seen really well-positioned, high-profile journalists from everywhere, actually, from Tina Brown, for example, all the way through to B2B trade publications, moving to Substack, building their own audience. And in some cases, that's given them a freedom to report without the editorial restrictions or the need to flatter advertisers. So in some ways, it's become a bit more unpredictable, a little bit less safe. That evolution is still happening. But it'll be very interesting to see how that pans out, because the need for quality journalism and third-party endorsement has never been higher for B2B buyers. Yeah. It's incredibly complicated to make a decision about a complex technology. People are working remotely. You don't have a colleague sitting next to you who's faced these challenges in terms of security, for example, or compliance. So the world of B2B buying, which are the people that we're seeking to speak to as comms people for IT vendors, is really, really complicated. And they're leaning into trusted voices.
Well, and we haven't even discussed the fact that now I'm a B2B buyer. I go into ChatGPT and I type, what, you know, network security solution do I need for my environment of X number of employees, blah, 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 blah. And it listens to the whatever ChatGPT spits out. That makes us in the media environment way more relevant, because what is ChatGPT? What are the LLMs pulling from, right? They are pulling from press, earned media, not from the old traditional SEO keyword necessarily sites. So now we do need to just have our stories in the media, even if those aren't. I used to never suggest just go and get, you know, press for the sake of getting press, right? Now you might want to just get press for the sake of getting press, because if you land on the top 10 PR agencies in London list, ChatGPT is going to pull that up into somebody's results, right? Even if that list doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things and you can't use it for anything else. So I also think that there is this shift towards, like, how are we discovering what the LLMs are pulling from? And then how are we influencing the messaging in those sources? And then how are we tracking over time how it's changing? Because for sure, the LLMs are going to change their data sources over time. And we need to be on top of that, because we're trying to influence the answers coming out of them. So it's very interesting.
The next question that ChatGPT has asked me to ask you is, what strategies or tactics have you found, apart from cookies, by the way, the most effective for building strong brands in the UK, and how's that changing? And I think that touches upon the point that you raise about being found in a AI platform. My sense is that you need more than just that. The validation of that is also necessary. And that may be where also editorial plays a big role.
For sure. As well as, this goes back to me, like, building my own brand on LinkedIn. Like, I think that, like, individual brands within companies are going to drive corporate narratives, right? And that's always been true. But I think it's becoming more true, because if you just look, everyone is so polarized right now. Everyone is so, we're hearing the same messages. We're seeing the same things. Everyone is kind of like being forced to pick a side. So you are seeking connection with people, and people don't connect with logos. They connect with people. So if you've got strong spokespeople in your company who can go out and represent your brand as their own brand that somehow connects back to your brand, like, that's the winning scenario right now, because people want to connect with people. And I think that there is going to be an even bigger shift towards individual thought leadership and CEO, founder brands, all of that, whether it's on social media or writing bylines or having their own podcast or whatever it is. Just, this is my personality, and this personality helps represent the actual brand, is the thing that's selling people on things in this next era.
Which is an asset and also maybe a liability if you've got
totally
eccentric spokespeople who perhaps are not towing the corporate line, then that can be even more damaging, I guess.
For sure. I mean, and I think right now what we are all trying to figure out is like, you're not Elon. You're not one of these people who is like going to just say what they want to say. They don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. Like, how do you have a perspective, show up authentically, and yet still not polarize half of your audience?
And it must be particularly challenging if you're working with spokespeople who are used to the North American media environment, and then all of a sudden are being thrust into the UK, where there is that degree of cynicism, that the need for localization. Mm-hmm. That must be very tough. I think that the experience that you have is hugely relevant to the people who are looking at the UK going, blimey, this is such an important market. £188 billion of B2B revenue each year means that this is like another state. It's like, it's a huge market for American brands. And it's also, as we saw, often the most significant next environment after the North American market.
Exactly. If you can get into the UK, that definitely helps you expand further into Europe. And, you know, you already have the advantage of not having to translate everything into other languages, which is helpful. And I think people underestimate the amount of effort and time it takes to do localization. Like, if you can localize in the sense of tailoring stories, making sure you have data for a local market without having to worry about like all of the language barriers, like you said, it's a huge market, already has the same language. You might as well start investing with people in the UK who understand the media landscape. One thing I did find is I think UK media does appreciate, even with the cynicism, they do appreciate when you are, I'm an American company trying to have a UK perspective for you. You know what I mean? Like, there is kind of a respect for that. So I think if you are willing to put in the extra effort to be like, I am going to localize this for the UK, it goes a really long way.
I totally agree. I think you're absolutely right. That little bit of investment of showing empathy and relevance and local insight is enormously powerful in the UK. And
from a non-UK company especially,
yes,
right?
Like, totally. Yeah, totally. And not everybody does that. So I think that's a shortcut way of getting ahead of the competition, because so many of your competitors as a B2B brand from North America coming to the UK just don't have that sensitivity to the fact that the market is different.
And they tell a lot of like global stories, right? And it's like, just do a little bit of investment in like a hyper-local something, and you can almost guarantee that it will get some kind of pickup, because it's just something different and data-driven. And it shows that you're like actually specifically paying attention to this market, and not just, it's not an afterthought, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, moving away from B2B PR specifically and talking about your role as a transatlantic comms director who's had to do a lot of travel, had to balance the needs of a family and all the responsibilities that I know that you have on your personal agenda, have you got any tips or hacks for, I know it's probably been a while since you've been in the UK, but for example, how do you deal with all these different time zones personally when you're traveling? How do you deal with transatlantic flights when most of us are not online, we're on a plane? You know, any tips for the travel part of the gig?
This is like so tactical, but like I have an extra set of all of my toiletries, like hairbrush, like all of the things, like just always ready to go, so that when I pack, I just have like all of that stuff's ready. Right. Then I just have to pick my clothes, which is a whole other disaster for my ADD brain. I hate packing. It's like my Everest. That said, I also use flights productively, as I call it, which sometimes means sleeping the whole way. Because if I'm going to go to the UK and I'm going to have a massive time change, I will sleep on the flight. I'm not going to feel guilty for like not working on the flight. But then on the flip side, if I need to stay awake in order to like normalize, I try to like do what I can do to normalize time change by either sleeping or not sleeping purposefully on the flight.
The next thing I want to ask you, maybe in some time since you've been here, but favorite hotels, favorite restaurants, any tips for that B2B marketer who's coming to the UK, to London specifically for the first time, because that's often the place that everybody comes to. What were your favorite places to visit, to go to?
That's impossible, because I lived in London for a while. So like I no longer have a good perspective on like what is just things that I liked versus things that, I don't know, I don't have a good answer, but I will say my favorite pub was the Churchill Arms. It's in Kensington, but like right on the border of Notting Hill. So if you're going to go to London for business, just make sure you build in a few hours to like wander around, you know, it's like the best place to just get lost for a little while.
Perfect. Excellent. Becca, that's been amazing. I'm really conscious of the fact that we have perhaps reached the time limit of the amount of time that I can get from you today. Actually, we should share as well. How would people find you on LinkedIn if they were looking for Becca Chambers?
Just look for Becca Chambers. Becca Chambers. I mean, Becca from LinkedIn. It'll be hard to miss me if you type in Becca into the search because I post a lot.
I highly recommend anybody who's tuning in to go and have a look at Becca on LinkedIn. I'm so grateful for you participating in Crossing the Pond. Thank you so much. And
it's great to see you.
Perfect. It's great to see you.